The late Abraham Joshua Heschel said this. He said that words make worlds. That words make worlds. That the words that we choose to use make worlds. The words, and perhaps more importantly, the words we choose not to use, that those words make worlds. Like the words in anger, in unforgiveness, in bitterness, that if we choose not to use these words, those words make worlds. Wait, maybe you didn't, and those are the words that you understand. Those are the words that you can get your mind around. But did you know the very nature of your words, or perhaps the words that your language does not have, can make and shape and mold the world, and the way that you view the world, and the way that you create the world, and the way that you conceptualize the world around you. Language is this chicken and the egg thing with culture. Like, does our language shape culture, or does our culture shape our language? Like the way that we have words and use words, like that is that's a reflection of culture, but also the words that we have, they create culture. We understand the world. So our language reflects and at times creates our culture. So these you'll see on the screen are the words that have been added to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary this year, 2018, that are the most popular, okay? TLDR. You know what this word means? If you send someone an email or you text someone something very, very important and they respond with TLDR, it means too long, didn't read. Never text that person again. You know, some people just aren't worth your time. And if they're going to text you back TLDR, they are those people. All right, next one, next word. Rando, short for random. It's one less letter. This is in the Merriam-Webster 2018 dictionary. It's not even less syllables. What is the benefit? Rando, random. It's dumb. I'll give you that. Next one. Anybody? Zucchini noodle. From the pit of hell. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. It's true. It's those of us who want to avoid carbs, but it's still like our spaghetti. Zoodle with your bad self. All right, next one. Hophead. Anybody? Beer aficionado. Someone who loves craft beers. They are a hophead. These are the words that are in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. Other ones from this year. Bougie. Bingeable, airplane mode, marg, because margarita is so hard to say, fave, adorbs, guac, hangry, mocktail, which is a cocktail without the liquor, and tent city, which just goes to show that as a culture we're doomed. We should just like pack up and leave now. I feel like what you see here is like these words, what you have is these words, like they reflect our culture. They reflect of what's going on in our culture today, here, and now, and to some degree, they create culture. Like because we have a word like tent city, we now can understand what that means, that large groups of people who are under-resourced have nowhere to live. Like they create a new tribe, a new community, and they live in a tent city. And that word helps us understand differently what this is. What you have going on here is actually something that Benjamin Lee Whorf, who was a linguist, he hypothesized on, in the Whorfian hypothesis. He says that the structure of a language determines or greatly influences the modes of thought and behavior characteristic of the culture in which it is spoken. As in, the way that your language is shaped and formed, and the way that you have words and don't have words, and the way that you might have more words to describe some things, or the things that your language is good at, will shape the way that you view the world. It'll shape the way you think. It'll shape how you understand and differentiate. He goes on to say that if speakers of one language have words to describe certain things and speakers of another language do not, then the speakers of the first language will have an easier time talking about those things. If one language makes distinctions that another does not make, then those who have the first language will more readily perceive the differences in their environment which such linguistic distinctions draw attention to. So, for instance, Inuit, which is an Alaskan language. I read that they have 100 words for snow, and that's not true. They don't. They only have 24, okay? But Inuit, which is an Alaskan Eskimo language, they have 24 different words for snow. Snow that is slushy, snow that is falling, snow that has already landed, snow that is good for making igloos out of, snow that is clean, snow that is dirty. They have all these different words, 24 different words for snow. And so because their language differentiates snow in all these different ways, it parses it out, it pulls it apart. They see the distinctions between snow. They see this snow is like this, and this snow is this, and this, and if it's slushy snow, that's good for making snowmen. We call it snow. If it's the fluffy kind that you can't really make snowballs out of, but you try anyway, snow. If it's on the ground, it's snow. If it's in the air, it's snow. But for them, they have different words for all of these things. And so that shapes the way that they view their world. It shapes the way they make distinctions. Your language, to some degree, will shape how you view the world, how you see the world, the distinctions that you make. This is the Whorfian hypothesis. And so if words make worlds, and if the way that our worlds function shape culture, then words have power. And the words that we have, the things that we have words for has power, and the things that we don't have words for, that has power in our lives. And there are subcultural words. Have you ever been to a doctor and have the doctor explain what's wrong with you, and then you have no idea what's wrong with you? Right? Because doctors have subcultural words. Even a mechanic, and the mechanic explains what's going on with your car, that it's your flux capacitor that's broken, then you know that you can go back in time, and you have no idea what's going on. Like in churches, in Christian world, like we have words. We have subcultural words. And the thing is, like in church world, like if we use insider language, what happens is it makes the insiders feel, yes, confident, I know these words, and you're saying these words, and so I'm an insider. But what happens is the outsiders feel like outsiders. And so the words that make insiders feel comfortable are the exact same words that make outsiders feel like they'll never be anything but outsiders, because words make worlds. And so there's a word that we're going to talk about today. It's this word that I feel like it's this word that it's used over 600 times in the Bible. And it's this word that I think it's gotten to a place where it's understood differently than how it was originally used in the Bible. And it's used almost like a weapon. And at the very least, this word, it feels like a wool sweater when you hear it and you think about it. It's like itchy against your skin. It's uncomfortable. This word is the word holy. If you have a Bible, it's probably on the front cover. The Holy Bible. So 601 times, including that. 602, including the binding. But this word holy, like it's this word that it's taken on a life of its own. And the Bible talks about it over and over and over again when the way it describes God. And it talks about this word over and over and over again in the way that it describes how your life and my life should be lived. But it means this other thing in our culture. Like as if words make worlds, and holy is a word that's used over and over again, then holy makes worlds. The thing is about holy is that when you say holy, like people get a little uncomfortable because it's this word that in our culture, it basically means perfect, right? Holy basically means perfect, you know? So if it's talking about something that's holy, you're talking about something that's perfect. And you're talking about our life, holy. The thing is, like in faith and in churches that are worth like the rooms they occupy and the people that are in them, in good churches, what happens is we're really, really comfortable with brokenness. And we couch brokenness with authenticity. And we say things like no perfect people allowed, and God will accept you as you are. And this is true, and it's good, and it's helpful. And this is how communities of faith should function. Like, there should be no one whose life is too messy. Like, if your life is that messy, church is the place for you, not the place you shouldn't be. right? You don't fix yourself before you come to Jesus. You come to Jesus and he fixes you. Right? This is, so like these sort of, like this level of like authenticity, we talk about authenticity, you know, my brokenness, my flaws. And honestly, like this is good and it's healthy and it's helpful. And I talk about my flaws and I air some of my, you know, dirty laundry and I'll have confession time and I'll talk about these things that I get wrong and this is good and it's healthy and it's helpful. But not if it lowers the bar of what God wants from us and for us. You see, the Bible says things like in Leviticus. Like Leviticus says this. It says, "For I, the Lord, am the one who brought you up from the land of Egypt, that I might be your God. Therefore, you must be holy, because I am holy." And then later on in 1 Peter, he says this again. He says, "As obedient children, let yourselves be pulled into a way of life shaped by God's life, a life energetic and blazing with holiness. God said, I am holy, so you be holy." And this word holy, like if God is holy, then that means that we have to be holy. He says, if I am holy, you be holy. Really, with our cultural understanding of holy, it's like, I can't possibly be that. Like, there's no way. It's like, all right, well, I'm done then. Check, please. Like, let me get out of here. Like, no, nuh-uh, not happening. Like, I know me. I know how flawed I am. I know what I say to the people around me when I'm driving on the highway. Not holy, unholy. Very much, right? And so you're like, check, please. Like, I'll just, this church thing must not be for me because I will never be holy. But it's one of these words means something different than what we expect. It means something different. See, this word holy in the original was this word kadosh. And kadosh, like it's this word that means meaningful, other than, different than anything else. And by meaningful, I mean not like it has meaning for you, like meaning as in when your life brushes up against something that is holy, you understand the meaning of your life more clearly. You understand you better when you interact with holy. That's what meaningful means. It's this word that's like hard to wrestle to the ground. It's difficult. And what happens is like the Hebrew language, which is what Leviticus is written in, and English, they approach life very, very differently. So like, for instance, the English language, the language I'm speaking now, hashtag analysis, like what the English language is really, really good at the tangible, physical, measurable world. Like in the English language, we can measure everything precisely. We can talk about the density and the chemical makeup of things like pillars and chairs and carpet and tables and clothes and water bottles. We can break these things down. We can measure them. We can understand them. We can look at the molecular makeup, and we can understand the physical world really, really well. This is the strength of the English language. And this is how we, as people who speak English, come to understand the world. The English language has a word for yard, which is 36 inches, and meter, which is 39. Like a yard is a yard, and a meter is 1.09 yards. Right? But we have two words. Like, do we really need two words for this much thing? But yet we have one word for love. Right? I love my children, and I love Taco Tuesday. Right? Like... I love Jesus, and I love binging TV shows like Stranger Things. Like, how is it the same word? But we don't do things like love well linguistically. But Hebrew does things like holy, and Hebrew does words like love very, very well. For instance, Hebrew has like 9 words in what we call the Bible, the Old Testament, for love. You know, they have a word like Ahab, which means love with attachment. They have words like chesed, which is love with kindness. They have words like rahem, which is a one-way love of a caregiver, like a parent for a child, or a child for an elderly parent. Like, this is like a one-way, one-directional caregiver love, which is different than the love you have for someone you're married to or in a relationship with. It's a different thing functionally, but it's the same word in English. The Hebrew has a word yada, Y-A-D-A with an accent, yada, which is love like intimate love, you know, like intimate love. Also, they have a word yada, Y-A-D-A, no accent, which means love that makes you want to throw your hands in the air, which I understand why those two things are so related. Sometimes yada makes you want to yada, you know. Sometimes the Bible, these jokes write themselves. I don't know. Yada, yada, yada will never be the same again. I don't. If yada is one thing, and yada is like, ooh, ooh. Sometimes you're just yada, yada, yada. Ooh, ooh. All right. But they have all these words for love, which is not a tactile thing, but we have one word. It's because the English does tactile really well, and the external world, and Hebrew does the internal world really, really well. So you see why it's so difficult to come to grips with a word like kadosh. Something that you experience, that your life brushes up against, and you understand you better because of it. Something that's other than the world that you see. Like you experience the world, the physical, tactile world, and holy kadosh is something else. It's something different, something that we would call sacred. The thing is, Hebrew doesn't have a word for sacred because everything is spiritual. And so what you have holy, which is meaningful, other than, different than anything else. And so this phrase, this verse, you be holy because I am holy. You be kadosh because I am kadosh. It doesn't mean you be perfect. It means you be meaningful. When people's lives brush up against your life, they should understand themselves better. When someone experiences life with you and next to you and alongside of you, they should see that your life is other than anything this world has ever seen before. Like there's something different, intangible, something eternal and sacred about the way you live and the choices that you make. Your life is kadosh. You be holy because I am holy. You be kadosh because I am kadosh. It's not you be perfect. We look at some other verses that have this kadosh word, like in Exodus 3:5. It says God meeting Moses at this burning bush. And Moses sees this guy who's God's going to use in meaningful and powerful ways. And so he's walking through the desert. And off in the distance, he sees a bush, but this bush is not burning up from the fire. There's something different about it. There's something other than he's experienced before about it. And this bush is going to be a turning point in his life, and he's going to understand himself better than he ever would have otherwise. And so Moses, he walks up to this bush, and the bush, God's presence from the bush, speaks to him and says, "Do not come any closer." Moses, the Lord warned, "Take off your sandals, for you are standing on kadosh ground." Now, dirt is not sacred. Dirt is not different other than meaningful, but this moment in Moses' life was going to be like a line of demarcation, a turning point. He was one person before this moment, and this moment happened, and he was going to be someone completely different. And it doesn't take much for us to be not spiritually susceptible, you're not spiritually aware until you're environmentally comfortable. Has anyone ever had this room so cold you couldn't focus? Right? Too warm, you couldn't focus. Like this room, it's either like a refrigerator or like the Bahamas in here. Like I don't know why, but it just is. It just happens that way. And it's sometimes oh my goodness, why am I sweating? Or why is it so cold in here? I wish they would turn the heat on, or wish they turn the heat down. And you can't focus because you're not spiritually aware until you're environmentally comfortable. It doesn't take much environmentally for like your focus and for your understanding that this is different, and this is other than it doesn't take much, and you're like, whoa, something's different, something's going on. Like we are perceptible to the world around us in ways that we can't even sort of articulate in the moment. And so what God is saying, he's saying that this is a defining, meaningful, other than sacred, holy, kadosh moment in your life. Take off your shoes. Like this is a different moment. Like there is something more going on here than you expected. And so he, in trepidation, slips his sandals off. And walks up to the bush and walks into the rest of his life. This ground there's something more going on here. You're going to discover something about yourself you didn't know was possible. This ground is kadosh. How about in Isaiah? In Isaiah, and in Isaiah 58:13, it says this: keep the Sabbath day kadosh. Don't pursue your own interests on that day, but enjoy the Sabbath and speak of it with delight as the Lord's kadosh day. And we talked about the Sabbath here like 6 months ago, and so I'm not going to belabor the point, but there's something that happens when you're producing and you're producing and you're producing and you're working and you're working and you're striving. You have responsibilities, and you take a few hours, you take a few moments, you take a day, you take a week on vacation, and you don't produce, you don't strive, you don't work, and you become a truer version of you, because that time, that week, that day, it's kadosh. There's something else. There's something sacred and meaningful and purposeful. And you understand your own self better when you pause from production. Keep the Sabbath. Keep days without production. Kadosh. And what that means, though, is if you produce and you produce and you work and you work and you strive and you strive, if you pursue the American dream in the American way with the American motivation, then what's going to happen is you're going to remove the meaningful times from your day. You're going to remove the times when you would understand better who you are and who God made you to be. You'll understand that less because you won't slow down long enough to hear from him. Keep the Sabbath kadosh. In Isaiah chapter 6, this is Isaiah, and this is what the book of Isaiah is it's this book that God gives Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, a vision, and he then writes it down. This is the beginning of that vision. It was in the year King Uzziah died that I saw the Lord. And what you have in the king Uzziah is this king, and kings were the closest thing to deity that you could walk and you could tangibly touch. And so when the powerful, when the influential, when the rich and the palatial, when eventually they die, because all physical things eventually die, he's like setting aside the biggest and grandest and boldest thing you've ever seen, set that aside, he died. When the year King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. Even that, he's creating like this contradiction, like this comparison, this contrast of like this guy, he was powerful, he was influential, he was rich, and he died, and I saw the Lord. He was sitting on a lofty throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Attending him were mighty seraphim, that's angels, each having six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they flew. They were calling out to each other, kadosh, 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 holy, holy, holy. We just sang a song, holy, holy, holy. This comes from this verse, because it's kadosh, it's kadosh, it's kadosh, is the Lord of heaven's armies. The whole earth is filled with his glory. And what you have when the Bible says something over and over and over again is it's not saying it for like poetic, like addition. It's saying it because it's cubed. It's like a multiplier. Like if you understand that holy means meaningful, that when your life brushes up against it, you understand your meaning more. It's other than, it's different than, it is set apart from anything you've ever experienced before. Then if it says kadosh, 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 then it's meaningful, it's other than, it's separate, but it's more meaningful than what you can understand and have experienced. When you're thinking of other than and meaningful, it's more meaningful than that. It's more other than and separate than that. And then you have another kadosh, so it's more meaningful than that, and it's more separate than that. And whatever it is you're thinking about, double it. And whatever you're thinking about that, double that, and that's what it is. It's not just, he's not just holy. He is kadosh. He is kadosh. He is kadosh. But he doesn't call us to be kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. He just calls us to be kadosh, which is good. And so you go back to those words. You be holy, for I am holy. You be meaningful, for I am meaningful. You be other than, for I am other than. You be separate from, significantly different, for I am separate and significantly different. He's talking about the way that you live, the choices that you make. Like, holy is uncomfortable. I'm not trying to tear down holy. It doesn't mean perfect, but it doesn't. But it is challenging. It is difficult. It is a high bar. And the thing is, like, We want faith to be attainable because it is, because Jesus loves all and accepts you as you are. And there are no perfect people allowed, but at the same time, he'll accept you as you are, but he has no intention of keeping you that way. He does want to grow you and to change you and to mold you. Like, holy, it is a high bar. I'm not trying to say that. It definitely is. We get so focused on be broken, be authentic, that sometimes I feel like we lose the high bar of holiness that he does call us to. Which is why we're talking about holiness in this series called Uncomfortable. Because it is uncomfortable. We are comfortable with come, be broken, be flawed, be authentic. That's good and that's healthy and it's helpful. And from that place of your brokenness, from that place of your flaws, shoot for holy. It's this both and. Yes, he'll accept you as you are, but that's not that doesn't mean that's where you stop. You be kadosh, for I am kadosh. And there's this passage in 1 Peter 3 that I love because it describes a kadosh life, but it doesn't even use the word holy. But if you live by these words, your life will be kadosh. But nowhere in this passage does it say holy, does it say this word. And so what it says is this, it says, instead, you must worship Christ as Lord of your life. And if someone asks you about your hope as a believer, always be ready to explain it. But do this in a gentle and respectful way. Keep your conscience clear. Then if people speak against you, they will be ashamed when they see what a good life you live because you belong to Christ. And so the first thing you see in this verse is it says to love Jesus. It says to worship Jesus as Lord of your life. Right? Look at verse 15. It says, instead, you must worship Christ as Lord of your life. And what this means is, like, these are, like, Lord is like this word that we don't use in regular, and worship is this word that we don't really use in regular vernacular. And we're getting back to this sort of struggle of your words make your world. But to worship Jesus as Lord of your life, it means every aspect of your life. You hold it up and you say, is this going to be under my control or am I going to give this over to God? My finances, my relationships, the way I use my time, the way I use my sexuality, the way I use my influence, all of it. Like, is this for me or is this for God? Is this for my use or is this for God's use? And as you go through your life, and the moment you have, like, your life, sort of like you understand it and you give it over to God, he's going to show you something else and you have to give that over to God. You're going to show something else to me, you have to give that over to God. And this is the way of life, and this is the way of Jesus setting you free. He loves you too much to keep you in charge of your own life because we've seen how that works. And if it would have worked for someone, if it was going to work, it would have worked for someone by now. And so, like, this idea of worshiping Christ as Lord of your life, to love Jesus, to worship Jesus, like, that's the first thing. Like, if you want to have a kadosh life, a meaningful life, look at your life, look at the aspects of your life, look at who you are, and take it and give it over to Jesus. Jesus, I could use this, I could do my thing with it, but I'm going to give this over to you instead. Worship and love Jesus. The second thing is to live weird. You didn't see that coming, did you? Let's get weird. You made it weird. Like, let's live weird. And what the verse says in verse 15, it says, instead, you must worship Christ as Lord of your life. And if someone asks you about your hope, that means that someone is watching you and they see you and they see the way you live. And they're like, that Jeff LaMica, he's kind of weird. And Jeff's like, yeah, I don't know. Right, Jeff? Yeah, exactly. And you're like, but they're like, it's not just like a weird. I mean, he's weird, but he's like weird in a good way too. Like, there's something different about him. And they're like, Jeff, what's different about you? Like, what? You're different than, like, other people. Like, in a world full of people who are scratching and crying for, clawing for attention, you give others attention. In a world desperate to make themselves feel whole, you are defined and whole. In a world of, like, selfish people looking to get ahead, you are selfless. Like, what is different about you? See, what happens here is he says, and if someone asks you, this assumes that you're going, once that you love and you worship Jesus, that that's going to shape your life in such ways that you're going to live weird. You're going to live funny. You're going to live an intangible holy ways, meaningful ways, other than what people have come to experience ways. So if you give every aspect of your life over to Jesus, you're going to live weird. you're going to make it weird. You're going to, let's get weird. Like, it's going to be weird. Be like, what's different about you? Worship Jesus, live weird, and then share hope. Like, if you do these things, if you worship and love Jesus, if you live weird and you share hope, like, it doesn't say holy, but it means kadosh, right? Be ready always to give an answer for the hope that is in you. You know, and for years, like, my family, we invested and we were really committed to, and we invested in the lives of our neighborhood. We just moved out of a neighborhood, and we had people into our homes, and we had people's children into our homes, and we invited people over, and we were having meals together. And it was like, and we were like this sort of, we just, it was this intentional choice to live weird, to live invested, to enter into people's lives, and those lives got messy, and we entered into it anyway, and people's lives crumbled, and we entered into that, and it was like this, it was just this conscious choice to enter, to live weird, to give ourselves over to Jesus, and to live with intentionality, and to be different. And people asked, they're like, man, like, there's something different about you. What's different about you? And we took love your neighbor very, very literally. It gave us the opportunity to share hope. I don't know what this looks like for you. Like, I don't know what practically, that's what worked for us, and we're moving into a new neighborhood and we're ready to get to business, and like, this is us and this is how we operate, but this is not maybe not how you operate. Like, I don't know what this looks like for you. Like, I don't know what worshiping and loving Jesus looks like for you. I don't know what living weird looks like for you. I don't know what sharing hope looks like for you. Like, and this isn't going to end with me telling you these 3 or 4 or 7 or 18 steps. This is how you do this. This is what your tomorrow should look like. This is going to be between you and Jesus. But this is what a beautiful life, a meaningful, a kadosh, an other than, a separate life looks like. When he says, you be holy, for I am holy, when your life brushes up against God, when you experience God, you understand your own meaning differently. It's other than what you've experienced in life, and it changes you. And what he's saying is, when he says, you be holy, for I am holy, he's saying, you be the changing catalyst in other people's lives. You worship me, you live weird, you share hope. And I can't tell you what this looks like for you. And if I did, it wouldn't be true to you, it wouldn't be alive. It would be beautiful, but it wouldn't be you. You know, it's like a butterfly. You can see a butterfly here. This is, you can buy this on Etsy for $300. I don't know if you're interested in that. And it's beautiful, right? Like, this is, like, if that was on the wall in someone's, like, house, it would stop me in my tracks. I'd be like, wow, that is so beautiful. It's like compelling, and like, those are actual butterflies sealed in like this case, and it makes you worship Jesus all the more because of the creativity he created the world with, and it's wonderful. It's beautiful. But have you ever been like at a park or outside somewhere and a butterfly flutters by, and you just, and all cynicism melts away, and all like adulthood melts away, and you just want to chase it? You're like, oh, a butterfly, right? And if my kids are with me, it's like go time. It's like, guys, look at that butterfly. It's so great. Let's chase it. And then, you know, it flutters away, and it can fly, and we can't, so it gets away. And I don't want to catch it. Like, that's not the point. Like, I do not want to catch it. And when the kids do catch it, like, I feel bad because it's no more butterfly. But, like, it's like this beautiful, magical, pure moment when the butterfly flies by and you know that it's in its natural environment and it was unplanned, and it's this magical moment. Like, look at that. Just go chase that. That is so compelling. It's so memorable. It's like this magical moment. Like, if I was going to tell you practically of what this should look like in your life, it would look like that. Beautiful, great, awesome. But not that magical, compelling, I have to chase after that moment. And when you live kadosh, when you worship Jesus, when you live weird, and when you share hope, people will see it and they'll chase after it. They'll run after it. They'll know it's beautiful. They'll know it's once in a lifetime, and they will come running. And so I can't tell you how to do this. I can only describe the process. And from now on, it's between you and Jesus. And you'll know what's happening when people ask you what's different about you. You'll know what's happening when people look at you and they're in relationship with you and they're like, you're weird. You're like, I know. It was Jesus. I'm kadosh. So, love and worship Jesus. Live weird and share hope. You don't have to stand on the corner and yell Bible verses. You won't have to be the weird person in the office who's constantly like Jesus joking, like, oh, you have a sprained ankle. Well, Jesus on that side. You won't have to. Your life will do the talking. Your life will be holy. Your life will be kadosh. You're like the butterfly who flutters by, and it's something different. It's a magical moment. You just have to chase after it. People will come to you, and people will ask you what's different about you, and in that moment, you can share hope. Let's pray. Jesus. God, if I've ever talked about brokenness more than holiness, I ask your forgiveness, because you call us to be broken, and from broken to pursue holy. But we are called to be broken, and we are called to be holy at the same time. And our brokenness can be holiness. And our holiness comes from brokenness. And so it is authentic to talk about brokenness, but it's also authentic to be honest about our holiness, the way that we are kadosh, the way that we love and worship you, the way that we live weird, that we live different, and the way that we, from that platform of a weird life, we share hope. Like that... That is so beautiful. It's so freeing. And God, it is a high bar. Like, it is a challenge. Like, is this going to be something that we spend our entire lives becoming more and more kadosh, more and more holy? This, as the verse in 1 Peter says, a life set ablaze by you, a life modeled after your life, your vibrant life. Like, this will take an entire life, and we'll still get things wrong, but it'll be an adventure, and along the way, we'll invite people into the adventure, and this is going to be at times uncomfortable, and at times exciting, and at times enough to motivate life. Like, it's one of those things that when people look at you, and they say, you're weird, what's different, and you say, it's Jesus. Like, those are things that make life worth it. Those are moments. So God, thank you for the challenge. For us to be holy. Thank you for the way that you don't let us stay in this broken place. Thank you for the high bar of kadosh. And really, Jesus, like, it's for you to call us to be meaningful other than that's you believing in us. That's that you believing us and when before we even believed in ourselves, and you setting a high bar for us. So I thank you for that. Thank you for the way that you believe in us long before we believe in ourselves, that you believe in our ability to be hope long before we see our own ability to be hope. You believe in us way more than we do ourselves. So I thank you for that. God, let us be a community of people whose lives are marked by weird. And from this place of us living weird, we share hope. We love you and we thank you. In your name, amen.